407, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, Todd.
Hello, John.
Yep, here we are again without the third member of the team who's been MIA for a long time now.
Well, he's going to be jealous. He's going to miss all the good fun we're having today because I'm going to do something that I love, and I'm sure Greg is not finding it as exciting. We're going to play with some databases.
Yes.
Now, why
I
do
think
we
it's a great idea to show some of our listeners where we get the information from. We don't just think it up. We don't just pull the information out of the air. We try to stick to the facts, and it's not entirely possible 100% of the time, but we endeavor to try to play as close to the facts as we can time after time.
Now, usually we do stuff where we're looking at the NTSB database or other databases from accident investigation authorities around the world, ATSB in Australia, AIB in Britain, and so on. But today we're going to follow up on what we were doing in a previous show where we talked about the use of AI in aviation safety. And what we were using then was a search I did on the NASA safety database. And for those of you who hadn't seen the show, just a quick recap of what that database is. This is a database of things that aren't accidents, but things that are of concern. Close calls, things people did wrong, and especially people who might have accidentally violated a regulation. And this is a self-reporting system where if you accidentally violate a regulation and you report on yourself, then the FAA can't come back and get you just because you fed this piece of information into this database. FAA works with NASA. NASA manages the database, so the FAA doesn't have direct eyes on this. But one of the benefits is all of us around the world, not just the United States, go into this database and look for something. And we were going to do a little bit different here. Instead of us doing the research in the background, we're going to do the research right here in front of you, live and in living color. Now, where does the research start? If you folks have watched the previous show about AI, it starts with writing down what we want to do, or at least what kind of thing we want to get out of it. Now, John, you're the expert in this podcast on all things maintenance, and we talked about one set of maintenance issues the other day. What issue would you like to look at now to see what sort of information we can find out about it?
Unapproved parts.
Okay. Unapproved parts. And again, I'm writing it down just so I don't forget it. Unapproved parts.
So for everybody out there, what that means is that you could have a part to an airplane or to an engine. If it doesn't have a tag on it telling you where it came from, the condition that it's in, how many hours it had on it if it hasn't coming right from overhaul. Right, so it basically has a birth certificate with all the hospital information on it. And sometimes parts will get on into the system that don't have a proper tag on them and get installed on an airplane. And doesn't mean it's going to crash. Just means now that the airplane has got a problem because the paperwork doesn't match what's on the airplane.
One of the things that I had to go around in my head when I first started looking at unapproved parts years ago is that my first thought in my mind, I'm not a mechanic and never been one, My first thought is an unapproved part is a fake part. And what you're saying is that is possibly an unapproved part, but also you can have a part that's perfectly okay in every respect, except it doesn't have its paperwork.
Right.
So we
Right.
have.
Makes it unapproved.
And I'm writing this down because when you say unapproved parts, let's say somebody doesn't know that term. That's a common term for an unapproved part. What other terms do they use to describe an unapproved part? I'm thinking fake part is one of them. So let me put that down, fake part. How else?
And we have had some of those circulate around, made in foreign countries. In fact, my first endeavor crossing an unapproved part was way back in the 60s on a DC-9 up on that vertical tail, the flat part on top that pivots. There's a pivot bolt. And in the 60s, it cost $4,000, one bolt. Substantial. And it's high tolerance, very tight tolerance, and exotic material. And several of them turned up, which they weren't tight tolerance and they weren't exotic material. They're just plain old bolts and they wore out real quickly. So that resulted in a lot of people going back and double checking the history of their bolts in the system. Fortunately, we've gotten a lot better since the 60s. We demand the paperwork from the people selling us the parts, even hardware. We want birth certificates on where the hardware came from. And so it is a lot better, but we still occasionally have some wise guys try to sneak in some poorly made parts, made to look good, made to look like the originals, but they're not the same. And in fact, not too long ago, a couple of guys went to jail for unapproved parts, for selling unapproved parts. And we just had a big one in London, or in the UK, it may not have been London, where they had a huge inventory of parts undocumented. Right, so it's just enough for not having the paperwork with the part.
Now, us just talking here, you just gave me another word to use. You have unapproved parts. We have fake parts. Parts with bad paperwork. And undocumented parts. So why do I want to write those various ways down? Because those are just some of the ways you can describe an unapproved part. Now, we can go on for days, but let's just start with this four sets of words and then go into the database. Now, how does this database work? The ASRS database happens to have two parts. One part where it has a bunch of codes for various things. Another part where they have basically people are writing down their own narrative of what's happening. I'm going to focus first on the narrative part of it and maybe a little bit on the coding part of it because there's a bunch of codes in there that talk about maintenance, but I like to start big and then get small. So what I'm going to do, and we're flashing the screen on the screen, what the input place is. We're going to go there, and then you'll see a shot of what it looked like once I started looking at the choice menu. All right, so what we have here is the Aviation Safety Reporting System, which again is a NASA website. They have a page you can go to where you can look at the actual database. And it has a start search down in the bottom here. Click on that. And up pops a form where you have all sorts of things. Date, place, environment, person, aircraft, event assessment. Those are all the database codes. Now, down in the bottom here, you see a text, narrative slash synopsis. So there are two blocks of text that are on each one of these reports. The narrative is whatever the person who sent the report wrote down. And the synopsis is what NASA did to basically do a short version of what this whole thing was about. So let me ask you this. What years are you interested in? Later years or years in the past?
1995.
1995.
The reason why I picked that is we had a lot of activity around unapproved parts in 94, 95. The FAA really started digging into it and put a whole group together to deal with unapproved parts.
I want to go in the date first, okay? Date of the incident was, and it says between two dates. So I hit that. and it gives me two choices, actually the beginning date and an end date. So let's go to 1995, and this database goes back to 1988, from January 95 to December 1995. And now I'm just going to go into the narrative part where it says text contains words. For example, unapproved parts. So let me do unapproved. That's in lowercase. And part. We have the choice of narrative and synopsis. I do both because what the person reporting writes down and how NASA will summarize that sometimes has different words for the same thing. So to increase our chances, we do both. Hit save, run search. We have three in 1995 that dealt with the words unapproved and part. Unapproved. I'm writing this down. And part. Why do I write it down? In, going back and forth doing stuff online like this, I want to make sure I don't forget what exactly I looked for. The first one was from August 1995. I looked down the narrative and it's talking about part 25. Now, there part has a different meaning in FAA world. Part could be like a part of an airplane, or part could refer to a portion of the regulations, the Federal Aviation Regulation. Is it Federal Aviation Regulations, FARs, or Federal Air Regulations?
You know what? I don't know. I've been FAIs my whole life.
It's like the military. A lot of things are called by acronyms. You forget what the real word is. But let's just say the regulations that cover what happens at the FAA. There is a part of the Code of Federal Regulations, Part 25, that dictates things about the structure of the aircraft. But we do have the word unapproved here. It says carrying cargo in an unapproved cargo bin. So the unapproved cargo bin is an unapproved part. Cargo carried in a cabin of a Part 25 Learjet 25 with the seats removed. Cabin does not meet the cargo bin requirements for Part 25 certified aircraft.
So why would you think that they was unapproved to carry something in the cargo, in the baggage compartment? I mean, in the cabin.
Well, my non-expert opinion would be, well, parts on the airplane are there for a reason. They fit in a certain way so they don't rattle and come loose, and that they don't cause any other problems. And if you have something that's not the right part, well, for whatever reason, it might not do the job that is required. It might not be able to hold the weight. It might not be able to hold it in case there's turbulence. It might not have the approved level of fire resiliency or fireproofing, what have you.
The easy one for an FAA inspector, and they like the easy ones, is that you have something in the cabin of the airplane that's freight, that's not a person. It's not secured because you have seats and the rest of it. So they don't have approved methods of securing it. And in turbulence, those things come flying around. What's required is a barrier between that cabin that you're going to be used to hauling goods in the airplane, and it has to be able to withstand 9 G's of force to protect the flight crew from objects that might be flying around inside the cabin because of turbulence. And I actually had a mechanic that I knew that was badly injured years ago, and he may have even been worse than just badly injured, and because he was being hauled away someplace to fix a broken airplane, they ran into turbulence, severe turbulence, and his toolbox, which they just threw in the back seat of the airplane, essentially it was a four-place airplane, became a UFO and struck him in the head.
Talk to me again about the unapproved bins. What's the biggest problem with a bin that's not the right bin being put into a cargo bin, that is, being put into an airplane?
Containment. You have to keep these things from becoming UFOs. Airplanes go through turbulence, and if they're not properly tied down, they can cause big problems. You puncture the hole in the airplane, slamming through the cockpit door into the cockpit. I mean, we've had all this happen. It's not pie in the sky. This stuff really did happen. So the re regulations around restraints on people and cargo in the cabin of the airplane is pretty robust. And the barrier that if you're going to carry cargo between the cockpit and the cabin has to be 9 Gs. Now, most of the way they get that is they have this big net type thing that secures top, bottom, side, and to the airplane with substantial fastness to make the 9G restraint. And then it can be removed if you're going to haul passengers again. Not easily, but it can be removed.
Let me talk to the folks who have joined the Flight Safety Detectives, our members. We thank you very much for doing so, and we're hoping that you are enjoying your membership and the benefits that come with that, including getting early access to new episodes and other goodies to be determined later. And if you're interested in becoming a member, you'll see a graphic on the screen with an arrow pointing to the join button on the YouTube channel. Join. Do what is necessary to become a member at whatever level you'd like and enjoy those benefits. And if you have questions, whether or not you're a member or not, write to us at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. And we're not leaving out sponsors. We love sponsors. We can always use more, and we hope that you can use our content to attract our audience to your product or service. Contact us at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. We'll have a conversation. It's a hot issue. We happen to be pulling it from 1995, but it was a hot issue then. It's still a
Still
hot
is.
issue now, and it was a
Yep.
hot issue 20 years before then.
Yes. And mainly it's more the paperwork issue than it is a legitimately fraudulent part. They do this. There's some out there, especially when you have airlines go out of business. Eastern Airlines flooded the market with parts because they had a bankruptcy auction in Miami and tons and tons of rotables, which are big, substantially expensive pieces of equipment, engine parts and parts on the airplane, down to minutiae, nuts and bolts that went to auction. And then the people tried to sell them back in the industry without any paperwork. So that's why I chose 95, because in the earlier, just a year or two earlier than that, is when Easton was being disposed of. And now I just had a conversation over the weekend with a couple of people about Spirit, because Spirit's airplanes are ending up all over the country, and Spirit's inventory is going to be faced the same thing. A judge who knows nothing about aviation, it's a state judge normally, is going to be the one in charge of disposing of all those aircraft parts, tires, engines. Most of the engines are probably leased. They'll go back to the leasing company, but the tires aren't leased. So wheels will show up all over the world that Spirit had inventory. And with or without the paperwork, there's going to be problems.
This is a little side conversation about the whole thing about who owns the airplane. You have an airplane, it has two engines, let's say a Spirit airplane, 737 or A320, has two engines on it. The airplane as a whole might not be owned by the airline, it's being leased by another company. That company might have a situation where the engines are not the engines on the original airplane. Engines get swapped out all the time, and the engines could be owned by a third party. So you could have an airline, a leasing company, and an engine leasing company, all, in a relationship with one another, and things can get confusing really quickly.
Yes, and almost none of them own the airplanes. None of the airlines own the airplanes. They usually buy them, and they have to put some money up front for the slot, so you get delivery. But before the airplane's delivered, it's normally sold to a bank or a leasing company. Some they own the airplanes. But some airplanes have different engine options, and the airline will then negotiate with the engine manufacturers to install an engine. So you might have Pratt & Whitney, or you have GE with the CFM, and you have Pratt & Whitney and a European engine manufacturer for the V2500. I forget who the other party was. And that's the alternate engine. So the airline will now start playing one against the other to try to get the engines down as cheaply as they can, because the engines are the most expensive component on the airplane.
Now, we had three that came up in our search. I'll go to the second one, and I can tell you, just from reading the synopsis, it's not going to be an airline problem. And I had some acronyms in there, but I'll read it out. Private pilot owner of a SMA single engine LAN. What's an SMA aircraft? Oh, a small single engine LAN. Okay. Private pilot owner of a small single engine LAN aircraft has the alternator drive belt replaced with an unapproved automotive belt. Okay, stupid question. Is there such a thing as an approved automotive belt that could be put on an airplane?
I bet there is. I'll bet there is. Because, sometimes they go out of production. A company that was making it goes out of business. And there is one that's similar or the same that the FAA will then approve, because you got to do something to keep the airplane flying. So they'll do some engineering on it and say, yeah, it's at least equal to what was originally on there. They look just like fan belts on the car sometimes.
So if I'm a passenger of a small single engine land airplane like a Cessna, maybe not a Cessna, I don't know if they use those kinds of belts. If the pilot says to me, "Yeah, we just got a belt replaced," it's an automotive belt. I shouldn't be too nervous.
No, not really.
Now,
Depends where you are. Depends where you are.
here's another stupid question, and I think I know the answer. Where is there a much bigger about on a problem with unapproved parts? Large airlines, Part 90, Part 121 operators, big airlines, or your private pilot operators.
No, clearly the big airplane. It's where the money is. All right. Like I said,
I
with that
would have
bull.
guessed. I would have guessed the small airplanes.
There's problems there too, the counterfeit parts, the big airplanes, the money. Like I said, that story I said in the beginning about the bolt for $4,000, that must cost 20,000 today. Well, the airplanes are not flying anymore, but towards the end there, but that was a very expensive bolt. So you're not going to get that in a little airplane that's only worth, might only be worth 5,000 or 10,000 today. That with inflation, they're all up there in value. But what you have on the little airplane side is pieces coming off airplanes that crashed. So you normally don't see that in commercial airliners, because the insurance companies send them to dedicated facilities. There's several of them across the U.S. and many outside of the country. They are very much controlled, and most of those parts get destroyed. So they don't come back in the system because they are controlled. But on the little airplane side, the Cessnas and the Pipers and the rest, there are many, many, many storage yards around the country where those airplanes are located, and they do take parts off them to keep the fleet going. Our general aviation fleet of airplanes, many of them have been out of production for 40, 50, 60 years. So their parts are not available at all. So in order to keep them going, there is a process where you can take a part off an airplane that has crashed and run it through a set of inspections and repairs if necessary, to get it certified to come back on the airplane. It is a chore. It's not just slam bang, I got this part, take a look, it looks good. You really have to do some work to make sure that the part is appropriate. It's not damaged. It is going to work. It's going to fit and function the way it should. So,
While you were talking, you said another phrase, counterfeit parts. And I wrote it down over here. I thought, just for fun, let me see how much I can scare myself. If I look for the phrase, not the word, but the phrase, counterfeit parts, and I just take, I don't know, the last 5 years, how many, the last 5 years, let me be specific, from 2021 to 2025? Let's run the search and see what happens. So in a 5 year span, oh, I got zero. Now, usually that means I did something wrong because I'm sure there was a counterfeit part in there somewhere. Let's go back and change the search.
go back to the 94, 95.
Okay. I'm going to adjust to the word counterfeit. No counterfeit parts. Same time frame, 94 to 95, just the word counterfeit. We have two. One is from April of 1995, but let's look at the narrative. It says, curious about the possibility of faulty or counterfeit parts being used in this last overhaul, but does not know how to check for something such as that. The reporter says that the FAA interviewed him and the other pilot as a routine matter. There was no actions pending. So that's a suspected counterfeit part. It seems to have been a private pilot, and there was no investigation. Let's look at the other one. This is from February of 1995. And looking at the narrative, off airport landing due to reciprocating engine failure. And in the narrative, it says the reporter was concerned about a counterfeit part having been put into this engine. It has not been determined if this was the case here. So I'm somewhat disappointed. I thought we'd find a whole bunch of stuff, which
Well,
means.
like I said in the beginning, it's mostly been paperwork. But without the paperwork, you can't install it. Hello, aviation enthusiasts, safety professionals, and curious minds. Welcome to Flight Safety Detectives. We are thrilled that you dropped by. Here, we dive deep into the world of aviation safety. From incident investigations and technical analysis to lessons learned and what they mean for safer skies. As a member of our channel, you get exclusive member-only perks, first access to new episodes, live stream discussions, and Q&A sessions. We are a community of fellow safety detectives who love aviation as much as you do. If you're passionate about aviation or just curious about how things work, we'd love to have you on board. Hit join, ring the bell to be notified, and jump into the discussions in the comments. Strap in, because together we're going to explore aviation safety like never before.
So let me think of another phrase that might get us a whole lot more results with respect to counterfeit parts or fake parts. Let's do a new search.
Suspected unapproved part.
Suspected unapproved
That's the
part.
official
Okay.
way that FAA calls it.
Okay, let's do that. Only one in the entire database? Well, let's look at it. It was in 2016 in September. And there are several narratives here. Let's go to the synopsis. Several mechanics reported that a BHT 407, it's a Bell 407 helicopter. So let me read it now that I know what the acronym means. Several mechanics reported that a Bell 407 helicopter aft tail rotor gearbox fairing had an undocumented hole added to access the gearbox oil level sight gauge. So that's not an unapproved part or suspected part. That is, what would you call that when they put drill a hole where they shouldn't?
For visibility?
Yes.
So that's an alteration to the airplane without proper paperwork, engineering evaluation, and 337 for a repair.
Now, in the
so
deeper
4,
narrative,
3, 7.
The deeper narrative up above, it still has an unapproved part associated with it, because narrative two, apparently three mechanics had a narrative here. One of the lines is, the fact is this modification has been on the aircraft for a while before it transferred here, and without being able to have the documentation available to prove that it was done properly to anyone who suspects an unapproved modification, then we have no choice but to remove suspected bad part and install new one on this aircraft. Now, the next paragraph, to avoid any recurrence of this happening again with any aircraft that moves out of its home region to support operations elsewhere, maybe it should have a list of modifications incorporated in the paperwork that a pilot or mechanic can look and see if any modification has been approved, when it was approved, and by who it was approved, to include the logbook number, log page number, and log card number. This highlights one of the reasons why the ASRS exists. This is a person who, qualified mechanic apparently, who had a reasonable suggestion. Whether or not the FAA follows up on this remains to be seen, but this is a system that captures these sorts of inputs from people in the field.
And it's funny that you talked about the UE, right? Because when we suddenly left Vietnam, we left behind a lot of material. And since we were operating virtually thousands of helicopters over there, there was a lot of pieces that were manufactured from Bell, a lot of engines from, if I remember right, it was Lycoming, but I'm not sure. They were brand new in the boxes over there. And it didn't take long for the Vietnamese to realize how much money those were worth. And those started to be sold on the commercial sites, engines. They didn't have the tape. They didn't have the paperwork. They were military engines, new, but they were military engines for those helicopters. They fit in the commercial versions, but they didn't have the right paperwork. But they started showing up everywhere because they were inexpensive compared to the other ones. And the Vietnamese were selling all over the place.
Now, another fun fact about aviation, what rules apply in a country is up to that country's version of the FAA. So it's possible you could have had countries that knew full well that these were unapproved or at least undocumented engines, but might not have had a problem with them. Or they might have technically had a problem with them, but what can you say to a good deal like that? They might let them into the country by the truckload because, hey, we got these engines real cheap, and yes, they don't have the paperwork, but it's better than what we have.
Yeah, and there's no telling how many people bought them cheap from the Vietnamese and then brought them back into the country somehow. And sold them not so cheap. So I'm sure there was a lot of that going on. There was a lot of plane parts that came back, especially the helicopters.
So we started this little endeavor here. I'm thinking, oh, we're going to have hundreds and hundreds of things of a particular nature. But you were asking very, very specific questions about things that are not quite right with the aircraft. And when you ask very specific questions, even with a database that has, what, 250,000 or more events in it, you might not get that many results. In general, with a database like this, the more general the question, the more events you're going to get. But then you have the problem of, I have all these events. Who's going to go through them and decide whether or not it's really an event that's what I'm looking for or something that just happens to have the right words in it? That's where the judgment part comes in. And it might be a very quick thing to download a couple of searches on ASRS or any other database. It's going to be a whole lot more work to see if the search results are actually something you can use.
Well, and to everybody out there listening, that is the crux of the problem with running shows like this show, is because we can pull up the accidents. Those usually very public. We can usually find press reports about the accident. But getting the details, unless there's a full-blown NTSB investigation, not just a single-person NTSB investigation, because that's usually just them and the FAA that'll show up. Oftentimes, it's just the FAA, and the information is sometimes lacking. So that requires us to do a lot more work to go try to ferret it out. And just a few weeks ago, on one, I worked for 2 days, myself and another guy, trying to get the details of what appeared to be a nice, interesting accident because of the circumstances. But the bottom line, we couldn't get enough factual data to use it. And so it's just sitting there. And maybe someday, you know, somebody will have some additional information. But it gets lost, especially with the turnover that we've had at the FAA over the last few years. Those guys go out the door, they throw their records away usually, their personal records, where a lot of that would reside, and they're gone forever. So we run into that more often than I'd like to. So on the maintenance side, I've probably run into that a half a dozen times a year, where we have a good accident that could really enlighten a bunch of people, but we just don't have all the facts to do it, and we're not going to make them up. So, so we can't speculate. We lose the benefit of that accident.
So what's my second to last word for this one? Second to last word is, well, you actually saw it almost live here. Searching for information might give you a whole lot more than you expected or a whole lot less than what you expected. It very rarely gets you exactly what you're looking for, because once you start digging into it, and especially this kind of database, seeing how people actually describe situations, how the persons in the database describe the situation might be many, many miles distant from what you think they should be using to describe it. So again, takes time, takes judgment. And as we talked about in the other show about AI, just because AI is smart doesn't mean it is wise.
Oh, true. And for the last word, I'll do what I always do, because we continue to have accidents in these areas. The first one is planning for your flight, including the weather. Do it at home or the hotel before you go to the airport. Do it at the airport again and make sure they agree. And the next one is so damn important, right? So mechanics are human beings. Mechanics make mistakes like pilot makes mistakes. But when you're going out to fly an airplane, the last line of defense for getting a bad airplane into the air, it's the pilot doing his walk around. And you got to do a good walk around. And if you don't know what a good walk around is, get a hold of a mechanic that works on the airplane. He'll help you understand the nuances of every airplane has little nuances. You got to keep your eyes open. You know, I can remember how happy I was, Todd, when you identified new hardware on the wing of an airplane. And you went and dug into it, because the last time you flew that airplane, there wasn't new hardware there. And, you know, you got to pay attention to all those little details, because you are the pilot. You are the last line of defense when you're going to go fly an airplane. And the other one that I keep hopping on, because they're coming up over and over and over, is near misses or actual collisions between an airplane with a student with it, and sometimes with an instructor with them, and another airplane, because they're flying an uncontrolled airport area and they're not paying attention and they lock wings or whatever. So please put that head on a swivel. Look around. Those are accidents that never, there's two accidents that never should happen. That one is the first one. Taking off and not knowing what's going on around you, not listening on the radio, not paying attention. Right? That's the first one. Getting diverted because maybe your engine's popping and misfiring, and you're concerned about that. Right? You gotta keep your head in the game. And the other one is airplanes running out of fuel. I'm working on one accident in New Mexico that was looking pretty good, and it looks like the guy had a problem. He did all the right things, sort of. We can, there's a little criticism, little area to criticize him and his method to get back to the airport. But right at the airport, when he was turning to land, he overshot, and it looks like he ran out of fuel. We don't have that nailed down yet, but it's beginning to look like he ran out of fuel. We still have hundreds of airplanes every year that crash because they run out of fuel, not because of extenuating circumstances like weather and he got caught and had to go divert 200 miles or 300 miles. Not that. It's the fact that they were nursing it along, trying to get back to their home station because the fuel there might have been 20 cents a gallon cheaper. You know, you can't take a risk. You can't take a risk. So, please, please fly safely. Pay attention. Fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetothetexans@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
For decades, Avemco Insurance Company has been an advocate for pilot safety by promoting and sponsoring continuous pilot training and education. One of their initiatives has been to reward pilots who actively participate in being more proficient with savings on their insurance premium through the Avemco Safety Rewards Program. Pilots save by earning new ratings, getting recurrent training, participating in the Fast Team Wing Program, and listening to podcasts like ours and other Avemco-related courses and training. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them the Flight Safety Detective sent you for an automatic 5% off.